Attention all you rule breakers, you misfits and troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists. Everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what's right with you. You see things others don't. You are hardwired to change the world.
You are listening to the Spiritual Activist Radio Show, and I am Rahasia Uncensored, where we look at the world not as it is, but as we know it can be, if and only if we have the courage to question the answers we've been given. This is our world, and it's time for us to take it back. Okay, we're going to have to hit the ground running here. We're going to be talking with Greg Braden. If you want to find out more about Greg Braden and his latest book, you can visit gregbraden.com. And stay tuned for a really packed episode, because we could have talked for hours, but we kept it to a minimum. So here he is. So, Greg Braden, how are you doing today?
I am doing awesome today. It's really good to see you. I'm happy to be with our audience today. And my sense is our time is going to go by very quickly. Yeah, I'm going to follow your lead, my brother, wherever you'd like to go with this today.
Okay. Yeah, you know, you're the last of the three amigos. I've been doing Joe Dispenza ever since What the Bleep. Bruce and I, he's been in our magazine like four or five times, you know. So you're the last of the three amigos here. So, and here's, I have a question for you. One is a complex question.
All right.
And I think it'd be better, though, to start out on this. It's something that's close to me, because I think we're getting ready to rewrite history. You know, in Plotinus, he once said, mankind is poised between the gods and the beasts. And I think if they knew that way back then, for sure we're knowing it now with all the genetic testing and the undermining of some of the hard, fast academic evolution ideas. What do you think that is going to happen over the next, I wouldn't even say months, you know, but over the next few months, maybe a year at the most, as this starts to unravel some of our traditions, especially religion and science for that matter?
Well, what the unraveling has been happening for 150 years. From the time that Charles Darwin proposed his theory of evolution in 1859, immediately mainstream scientists at that time were not on board with his theory. And my newest book, it's called Human by Design. I've actually got quote after quote after quote from very well-known scientists from the 1850s all the way up into the late 20th century. Because the thinking is that all scientists are on board with this idea, with this story. And the reality is that the story has had problems from the very beginning. So what we're seeing is the unraveling, if it is in fact happening, it's happening more in the mainstream perception than in the scientific world. Because the real scientists, not the pop scientists, not the scientists that you're going to see on CNN or on an airport glossy, you know, magazine, or something like that. But the real scientists have been on board with the problems of the theory of evolution for 150 years. So I think what's happening is mainstream is catching up with what those problems really are. And I'm hoping that this book really goes to contribute to what that is. It's based upon peer-reviewed science. So it's not just my opinion. It's not my theory. It's not my hypothesis. And there are two big problems. The physical evidence has never supported Darwin's idea of evolution. And we've known that for 150 years. But if that was the only story, we wouldn't be having this conversation. What's new is in the last, just the last few years, last 5 years, last 7 years, the DNA evidence that cannot be refuted, the DNA evidence is now overturning 150 years of scientific thinking. And the DNA evidence is telling us that we did not descend from Neanderthal, that we did not descend from those other forms of life that you see on what is called an evolutionary tree of life, number one. Number two, the DNA evidence is telling us that we as modern humans, appeared suddenly on Earth 200,000 years ago. And what's interesting is that the mainstream science actually agrees with that. They agree that what are called anatomically modern humans appeared relatively suddenly 200,000 years ago. So they're on board with that. The problem is, where did we come from? Because there appears to be no evolutionary path leading to our emergence. We just showed up. And now that we have what is called forensic DNA, this is where we can take modern DNA, DNA from modern humans today, your DNA and my DNA, and scientists can now look at this and work backwards to find out what had to happen for us to be as we are today. And this is where, if there's anything unraveling, this is where the story is really unraveling, because the forensic DNA is showing that our genome has been tweaked, that there's been a genetic fusion in chromosome number 2, for example, that simply cannot happen under natural conditions. It doesn't happen. Evolution cannot explain that tweaking. There has been a reversal of genetic letters in chromosome number 7 that gives us the ability for complex speech and the ability to connect our tongue and our mouth and our brain in a way that we can have this conversation. The chromosome 2 changes are what gives us our neocortex and our uniquely human abilities of empathy and sympathy and compassion and self-regulation of our biology. And we could say that these things maybe were an accident, maybe they're a fluke. The problem is they all happened at the same point in our history. They all happened 200,000 years ago. They didn't happen slowly, gradually over a long period of time. That's a problem for scientists that are adhering to the story, Darwin's story of evolution. So I want to be really clear on this, though. We kind of jumped right into this. I want our viewers to know I'm a scientist. I'm a degree geologist. And as a geologist, I've had the opportunity in my career. I was a geologist in the energy industry back in the energy crisis in the 1970s, the first energy crisis in the 1970s. And I had the opportunity. I've seen evolution in the fossil record. So I've seen evolution for many forms of animals, for many forms of plants, for many forms of insects. So I want to be really clear. It's not that I don't believe in evolution. I do. And I think Darwin was right on for some forms of life. The story breaks down when it comes to humans. And this is where I think Darwin, if we can say that he made a mistake, I think this is where he made the mistake. Because what Darwin said was he looked at some forms of life in one place on the planet in one moment of time. And he generalized and said that what he saw happening there was true for all forms of life everywhere on the planet throughout time, including history. And I think that's where he made the mistake.
Okay, so at this point, I would like to ask you a question that I think probably any unindoctrinated adolescent would ask. Who did the genetic alterations?
We don't know. That's the whole point. The point is that we are steeped in a scientific story that requires our scientists, the brilliant minds and the passionate hearts of our young people that are in school right now, that are willing to dedicate their lives to understanding and unlocking the mysteries of human existence. They are required in mainstream education to follow a story that we now know is no longer supported by the evidence and based in false and obsolete science, but they're required to do that. So this is my thinking right now. I am a scientist. I lost credibility for my science the moment that I began talking about spirituality with science. So when you marry science and spirituality in the scientific community, typically, you know, we lose our credibility. So I have nothing to lose any longer by sharing the truth as I have come to understand it. And what we can say with absolute certainty is that the evidence does not support the story of evolution. So I want to make a distinction here. There's a huge difference between trying to fit all of the evidence that is recovered into a pre-existing story, a pre-existing theory, which is what we're trying to do now. There's a huge difference between doing that and following the evidence to the story that it is telling us and allowing the evidence to tell us, you know, what that new story really is. This is my invitation. This new book is my invitation for mainstream science, for academia, to do just that, to allow our young people to follow the new evidence to the story it tells, so we can answer the question that you've just asked, what happened in the past? So as a scientist, I cannot tell you. What I can tell you with absolute certainty is this. I'm now in my mid-60s. I have spent much of my adult life with indigenous peoples throughout the world and studying ancient and indigenous traditions, cultures, texts, and the stories that are handed down from one generation to another. Now, I have not studied every single indigenous tradition on the planet. However, every single indigenous tradition I've studied, they all tell the same story. And the texts support the story. And what that story is that there has been an intervention in the past, and that we are the product of that intervention. That depending on who you talk about, the Sumerians, the ancient Sumerians have their story. The ancient Egyptians have their story. The Christians have their story, and they've got pictures to go with their story. And the Hindu traditions have their story. And the Navajo of the American Desert Southwest, they have their story. The Hopi have their story. The ancient Hebrews have their story. Science has had a story called evolution. If you watch the History Channel, they have a story called Ancient Aliens. And now we have a new story from our DNA that says something happened in a moment in time. It didn't happen slowly, gradually over a long period of time. 200,000 years ago, our DNA was shifted over multiple chromosomes in a way or in ways that cannot be attributed to biology, to evolutionary biology as we know it today. So the common theme in all those stories is that there has been an intervention and that we are essentially the product of that intervention, that we, well, here's where the science is today. Because the scientists now know that evolution cannot be the reason that the DNA is as it is. They say that we have reached a point that they call forbidden territory. And I love that term. It's forbidden territory because it implies that there's an intentionality underlying these genetic changes. And if there is an intentionality, it also implies that there is a purpose, that there is, we are more than the product of random mutations that just happened to occur in a really lucky streak of biology. It suggests that there's a purpose. And this is where I'm really fascinated by this, because when I look at the changes in the DNA, they give us as humans, as modern humans, abilities that no other form of life are given, and they all fall under the category that we can call self-regulation of our biology. Now, I know Bruce Lipton talks about this, Joe Dispenza, both of these brilliant men are colleagues that I tour with frequently. We have this conversation all the time. We are the only form of life that can consciously sit down in a moment in time and choose in that moment to self-regulate our immune system, to strengthen it, to choose to activate the anti-aging enzymes that live within each of us, that choose to access deep states of intuition because we want to do that, that choose to go into the gamma brain state that Joe Dispenza talks about for healing. So we're the only form of life that can do that. And it's possible because of these changes that were made in our DNA 200,000 years ago. So along with the intentionality, we are now looking at the very real possibility that we are intended to access these extraordinary states of consciousness.
Yeah, it has to make you wonder what else is locked up in our junk DNA. I mean, we could have the whole process of photosynthesis locked up in us, as far as we know, where we could skip the animal and the vegetative process of getting energy. For me, this is the most exciting time to be alive. And sometimes when I talk with friends, they ask me, and this is going to get into my next question, because I would personally like to know what your answer would be to this. I have many spiritual friends, quote unquote, and some of them are pretty in touch with reality. They look at the news and look at the, and they balance that out pretty good. But I have others, when I'm around them, I can't even bring up geoengineering or chemtrails or vaccinations or anything, because they're so afraid that by thinking about it, they're going to manifest that in their world. And I try to explain it to them. It's like, if you go back in ancient times from the Middle East, they say, believe in Allah, but tie up your camel first, you know? And I think if I was to modernize that, it would be, okay, I can walk across this busy intersection, but I'm going to keep my eyes open while I do it. And it doesn't mean you're being negative. So my question is, and I can tell from everything I've read about you and watched, that you really do pay attention to what's going on in the world. I know you're not worried, but you're deeply concerned, like anybody that thinks would be. And we all know that we're on the precipice of the cliff. And if we go too much further, we're either going to have to learn how to fly or learn how to land. And right now, we still have a choice. How do you walk that razor's edge of balance? Because somehow I've learned how to do this. And I've noticed if I can walk on that razor's edge, it puts me on a slightly higher visual point of what's going on. And I can see some of my spiritual friends that have their blinders on. I can see the world they see, but the horizon is pretty close. From up here, I can see a little further over the horizon. But it's precarious, because if you watch the news, it can grab you. You have to learn how to balance it. How do you do that?
Well, you just asked a whole bunch of questions in that question. So I'm just going to step back about a half a step. When we talk about spirituality and spiritual seekers, from my perspective, everyone on the planet is on a spiritual path. We are all on a path of understanding our relationship to our own bodies, our relationship to the earth, our relationship to one another, our relationship to the future, our relationship to the past, our relationship to the cosmos, and if you believe in a higher power. So spirituality, in the essence of spirituality is about relationships. It's about our relationships to this world and one another. Not everyone recognizes that they are on a spiritual path, and not everyone would identify with that term. But from my perspective, we're all at different places on a spiritual journey. This is part of the problem with the New Age movement, and it's like a pendulum. And I saw this happening back in the 1980s with the harmonic convergence and, a lot of things when what was then called the New Age movement was really coming into its power, is that people would grab onto these ideas and they would take them to an extreme. That pendulum would go to an extreme. And I have friends that are in the same place. They're still in that extreme. And they believe that if they think about something, it's going to show up in their lives. This is where the science helps us. And I think this is science really helps to keep us grounded. Science does not have all the answers. Science is new. It's only 300 years old. It's a very recent way of describing these relationships. And science is full of contradictions and inconsistencies. On the one hand, and on the other hand, if we honor science and we honor the principles and the protocols of science, it will help us to weed out what's true and what's not true. So you know, I know, our listeners know, there's a whole lot of stuff out there in the New Age movement that simply is not true. Some people have been hurt. Some people have died trying to follow healthcare protocols based on New Age thinking without fully understanding those protocols. So they said, you know, I'm going to heal cancer naturally, but they never followed through with the natural principles to make that happen. I have five friends, right? I just count five friends that are no longer in this world because they did precisely what I'm describing right now. So there's a lot of really hokey stuff, and there some of the new thought, New Age principles are based on really solid ideas that have been with us for a very long time in our indigenous traditions. So one of these New Age ideas is if you think about something, you're going to manifest it, and that simply is not true. If you think about it only as a passing thought in your mind, if you honestly acknowledge, say, this is what a chemtrail is happening, you know, in the world, or Fukushima is putting radiation into the Pacific Ocean. I mean, those are realities. Where we begin to create is when we imbue that thought with an elevated emotion. And I know Joe Dispenza talks about this a lot. Some of the other people out there do as well. There was a man named Neville back in the 1970s that was a pioneer, where a lot of people are getting their ideas from now. I followed Neville and his work. He was a brilliant man, a philosopher. And he's the one that really helped bring these ideas into you know, the mainstream thinking. It's the thought is not going to create the reality. It's the thought held as a focus and given the power of an elevated emotion. It is our love for what we think, or our fear for what we're thinking, or our hate for what we're thinking. That's what energizes that thought. So if you simply talk about these things because they're a reality, but if you can do it without the love or without the fear or without the hate, then you're simply being honest with yourself. And you're saying this is a reality in this present given moment, and it can change in the next moment. You're allowing for it to change in the next moment. So for me, the science really helps me to know what's true and what's not. The things that are true, I like to do a lot of. The things that aren't true, I don't put any energy into them. My books are based on that principle, peer-reviewed science. And I'm with you there. I have a lot of friends that, you know, it is very difficult to have this conversation. But for the reasons that you've just shared, it's all about fear. So this is why I'm sharing the things that I'm sharing. This new book, Human by Design, it's broken into two parts. The first part is the science that overturns 150 years of false science when it comes to who we are. And the second part of the book is how do we apply that in our lives. My thinking is this: the better we know ourselves, the less we fear the change that we're seeing in our world. The better we know ourselves, the less we fear one another. The better we know ourselves, the less we fear ourselves, our own power, because we are self-referencing beings. So what that means is we identify ourselves with our environment. And when everything is nice and stable, we feel safe and comfortable. And when our external environment, when the economic system or the climate or the political system or the military system or the social system, whatever it is, when those things begin to change, we are saying, what does it mean to me? And if we don't know the answer to that question, if we don't know who we are, then those changes look frightening and it's hard to talk about them. If we know with rock solid certainty that we are imbued with the gifts and the abilities that I'm talking about in this book, and I think we'll talk about in this, hopefully in this conversation a little bit, we begin to feel less concerned about our external world because our well-being and safety is not hinged upon what's happening out there. So when we know who we are in here, and so this is a long answer to your short question now, how do I do it? As I have become more comfortable with who I am and my potential, my abilities and my capabilities, I'm less concerned about the changes in my external world.
Well, let's talk about your book a little bit here. You say it's broken up into two parts. What's the two parts about, and why two parts?
So we talked about this a little bit earlier in this conversation. The first part of the book, part one, is the science that now tells us that evolution is not our story. We are steeped in the false assumptions of Darwin's idea of evolution for 150 years in the mainstream. So when I say mainstream, it's mainstream classrooms, mainstream textbooks, mainstream documentaries, are fighting to hang on to a story that is called the standard model. The standard model is no longer supported by the evidence, however, is still being taught as fact in mainstream. And there is such an effort to hang on to this story, even stations like PBS here in America. And I'm a huge fan of PBS, and I'm also very disappointed in PBS because they put their energy into an 8-hour series called Evolution, a beautiful 8-hour miniseries called Evolution, beautiful graphics, beautiful animations, and they systematically chose to exclude any science that does not support the standard model, even though the science is out there. So they are contributing to these false stories, this false narrative. So the first half of the book is the peer-reviewed science that is telling us, number one, why the physical evidence. I'll just tell our viewers, if you look at the evolutionary tree of life that we've all seen, that modern humans shows a modern human skull up at the top, and then the skulls of other forms of life, Lucy and Australopithecus and Neanderthal and all these things, and they're all below us, and the idea is that we have descended from these forms of life. The problem is, if you look closely on those, look at the Smithsonian. I mean, they're very honest about what they're doing. The lines that connect us with those other forms of life, they are broken lines. They're dashed lines. They're not solid. And the reason is because there's no evidence to support those lines. They are called inferred relationships or speculative relationships. They are believed to exist. They simply have never been proven with physical evidence for 150 years. But we're teaching it as absolute fact. So I describe that in the book, but then I go further and describe the DNA evidence. So we've talked about some of this, the mystery of the fused chromosomes, the way the chromosomes are fused. Chromosome number 2, for example, it's a telomere-to-telomere fusion that simply does not happen that way in nature, typically in mammals. When you see a fusion of chromosomes, what happens is there are two chromosomes. Something causes a break in the chromosomes. It could be an environmental change. It could be a toxin. It could be all kinds of things. Typically, the chromosomes break and they fuse at the break point. That didn't happen with us. Our chromosome 2 is the result of two completely intact chromosomes fused telomere to telomere. So the DNA that usually is at the end of the chromosomes is actually in the middle of the chromosomes. But here's the kicker. After the fusion happened, the redundant, the overlapping parts of the fusion were shut down, turned off, or all the way removed to streamline and stabilize the resulting chromosome. That doesn't happen all at once in evolutionary biology. That is the result of an intentional act. Now, we don't know who or what or how, but we know that's not that biology doesn't support that. So, and then I talked about chromosome number 7. It's called, the gene is called the FOXP2 gene. For 75 million years, all primates have this FOXP2 gene, and there was never a shift. It's a very stable gene. All of a sudden, 200,000 years ago, only for us, for modern humans, there was a little shift in two genetic letters that had never happened in 75 million years, and it didn't happen for any other primates, that gives us the ability for language and complex speech, and it has been stable since that time. So these are just a couple of examples. We talk about this in the book. So the first part of the book, I'm giving the reader the reason to think differently about our origins. The second half of the book is, now that we know that, what does it mean? How do we awaken the extraordinary potentials that these genetic changes bring into our lives? And this is so interesting because those potentials in the past have been believed to only be possible for mystics or yogis or advanced martial artists, or people that live in a monastery in a mountaintop, you know, on the other side of the planet, and never interact with the world. And the reality is what we used to call extraordinary capabilities, I believe are actually ordinary capabilities that we simply have forgotten. So as we awaken these capabilities, and this is, I think, where we're going to get to our answer, as we awaken the capabilities, and as we follow the clues, I think by embracing these truths, they will take us back to answer the question that you asked at the beginning of this conversation: where did those changes come from? I think as we embrace our potential, it will lead us to the answer of that story, lead us to our origin. And I think some people will be surprised. I think some people may not be surprised at what or how that intervention was or how it occurred.
Yeah, so much of what you're talking about as far as science goes, like even the fusion, would explain whoever it was that did that. That would explain why, if they started out with primate DNA, how we went from 48 to 46. Because if you take and fuse it together, you're going to lose a couple of DNA strands, you know. But Greg, I have to say, man, sometimes I sit in awe of the world we live in, like listening to you right now, because we're living on the edge of a total transformation. I was walking through the university the other day, and this young student came up to me, and she recognized me from the magazine. She says, "Oh, Rahasia, hey, I want to ask you a question. You see all of these amazing things out in the world. What do you think is the most amazing thing you've ever seen?" And I was thinking of all the amazing things. And I looked around and I told her, I said, "I think what I find most amazing is that there's so many people walking around that don't think it's amazing at all. How do they do that? How do you get up of a day and not have a conversation like you and I are having right now about the very essence of our existence, where we came from, where we're at, where we're going? I mean, there's whole doors opening up. And, you know, like the other day I learned there's the Hebrew word for paradise. One of the definitions is that it's a cage for animals. I mean, that alone gives anybody a little bit more to think about when you start reading some of the old biblical texts and all that. But this is going to be a hard red pill to swallow for a lot of people. And the old saying, well, you can't handle the truth. I think people are getting to the point where they can not only handle it, they're hungry for it. They're starving for the truth. And I think this is what's driving independent media. And, you know, like I was talking to Dr. Tenpenny about vaccinations and everything. And what really came out as I started talking to my friends about the dangers of vaccination, what's really going on, I noticed the people that were absolutely for vaccinations, they're like adamant that this is the way to go. And every single one of them would say, "Read the science." Okay. Have you read the science? Well, no, I haven't read the science, but I know I trust the science. And that's what they're saying. It's safe. Okay. I go and I read the science. And the science is telling me, I mean, from William Thompson at the CDC on, is telling me that something is very, very questionable about what's going on. And then I started talking to my friends that were against vaccinations, and they all did read the science. That's why they're against it. So there's a cognitive dissonance that people don't like to approach sometimes. And yeah, I heard you say one time that something about there are forces behind the scenes that are doing things to help us through this. And I sort of see this too. You know, even on Fox News, they're starting to talk about UFOs and different things, you know. And that's a good sign that they're at least talking about it. But I think there are forces within our government, our military, that have to stay sort of back behind the scenes. But I tell you, when you start pulling that curtain back a little bit, you start seeing what's going on. And it is just an old, frail, old man psychopath back there pulling levers of fear and control issues. And the more we pull it back, that's what changes things. They don't call it darkness just for a term. It's darkness because there's no light put on it. And the moment you put light on somebody that's doing something, and the only way they can do it is because they have power, and the only reason they have power is because they're working in secrecy and in darkness, that starts to change things. And I think that's one of the things we're seeing right now with people like yourself and Bruce and Joe and this show and many, many others. We're pulling back that curtain. Matter of fact, we're ripping it down. And what we're seeing is something that a lot of us have suspected for years, that the people in control that we've let get in control are not right. They're psychopaths. They're neurotic and psychotics. They're narcissistic. I mean, I'll ask you right now, would you want to be a politician? No. Who in the right mind would want to be a politician in this world and the way it is? You know, unless you were somebody that wanted to get in there and dedicate your life to changing the whole system, you know? Do you think that there are forces behind the scenes working to bring all of this stuff out?
Well, I'm just going to go back to what you said earlier. The veil has already been pulled back. The veil's been pulled back for a long time. I think what's happening now is more people are becoming aware, and they are open to that awareness because they see the world changing. If we did not live in a world that was changing the way the world is changing, I don't think you would see the openness to the new ideas. So, and this is something I've talked about for a very long time, but we live, I'm a scientist. I recognize cycles in nature, and cycles aren't talked about here in Western science very much. But I look at the big picture of natural cycles. We're living the convergence of three cycles in a very rare way. We've never seen in 5,000 years. The climate cycles that are natural rhythms, economic cycles, natural rhythms, and human conflict cycles that follow natural rhythms. All those are converging. They're turning our world upside down. And people now recognize that something has to change. And the only things that are lighting up are the things that are not sustainable. The things that are sustainable and true, there's no problem with those things. It's the unsustainable things that are based on lies or based on false thinking. So, yes, that is why the veil is being pulled back. That information has been out there for a long time. It simply is that more people now are open to embracing what that information is saying. There have always been forces. I've been asked to run for political office. I was just asked recently asked to run for a congressional seat. And I've declined because I feel like I'm probably more effective as an independent researcher and author than I would be as a politician beholden to the people that elected me to represent them. That would be a very narrow constituency. Although I have a lot of respect for, there are some good politicians out there. But the system is so broken. It's very, very difficult, even with the best of intentions, I think, for a politician to do what it is that their heart leads them to do. I did a program in Washington, D.C. not long ago. You never know who's going to come to a program inside the Beltway. And there was a man that came up to me during the break, and I knew... I didn't know exactly what agency he worked for, but I knew that he was there as more than a passing interested attendee. And he came up and engaged me, and we started a conversation. And I asked him, I said, do you have a problem with what I'm doing here? Or do the people that you work with have a problem with what I'm doing here? He said, Greg, not at all. He said, we would like for this information to get into the mainstream, to get to the public. We don't know people the way that you know people. This is what he said to me. He said, you're sharing this information in a way that is responsible, it's professional. You know, you're not telling people that there's a bunch of bad stuff and then sending them home with a lot of fear. And there are some people doing that. You know, there are people out there talking about conspiracies and dark governments and aliens and abductions. And then they say, okay, have a nice day. And, you know, what do you do with that information? Right. So he said, we would like for people, the world, he said, the world is changing. And he, very interesting. He said, the world that you're speaking to is the world that we live in with our families. He said, the world's changing for all of us. We all have to think differently. And he said, I'm curious as to how you go about doing this as well as you do. And that's why I'm here. So do I think there are forces out there that would like to bring a lot of this information to light? I know there are. But there are so many different perspectives, and there's so much false information that's out there. And where we run into problems is there are some people that call themselves whistleblowers, for example. And they'll start out, and they will whistleblow on something that we all know is true. And when that happens, our psychological filters relax. When we hear something we know it's true, we say, oh, okay, this person knows what they're talking about. And if you're not careful, they will cross the boundary, and then they start talking about stuff that is not true. But because your filters are down, you know, you begin to accept that. And pretty soon you're sucked into this very dark vortex of black governments, secret ops, conspiracies. And I'm not saying those don't exist, but I am saying this, and I can see this happening to people I know in my life. This is where neuroplasticity comes in. All right. When you look at the world day in and day out, and everything you see is a world of conspiracies, dark governments, you know, and really, really dark things. When you eat, breathe, drink, and think that day and night, your brain will actually begin to rewire itself to follow that kind of information. And when you see the world through the lens of those things, that's all you're going to see, and it will make you crazy. I've seen people literally, they've lost relationships, they've lost jobs, they've lost income. It's stressful. They lose their health. They develop, you know, health conditions that are pretty serious. So I'm not saying don't acknowledge those things exist. Yeah, it's a free-for-all. Everything exists. Now, where do we want to put our focus? That's the key. I choose to place my focus on the deepest truths of our existence that tell us that we are empowered to thrive in whatever comes to our doorstep. And the more we begin to embrace that power, the less we give our power away to the outside world. If you don't give that world your power, that power can't exist. So this is what the Buddhists tell us. This is what my native friends tell me. It's only in the resistance to that power that we give that world power. You know, I spent a lot of time in Tibet back in the 1990s. And when I talked to the monks and the nuns and the abbots about meditation, and I would say, when you guys go into your meditations, you know, what do you do with the stray thoughts that come to you and distract you from your meditation? And they laughed at me, and they said, those stray thoughts are part of the meditation. They're not distractions. And they said, the key is, with those stray thoughts, is they said, let those thoughts do whatever they want to do and stop resisting them. And with no resistance, they have no reason to exist. It is our resistance to the stray thought that keeps the stray thought coming. So I'm using that as a principle to these forces that we're talking about. It's our resistance. When we're fighting, that is the fundamental law of this reality. It is that resistance that gives them a reason to be. When we begin to shift our focus in a very real and very healthy and very honest and truthful and factual way into the deepest truths of our existence, our whole world begins to change. And I'm seeing this happening in communities all over the world right now. So yeah, it kind of goes back to the first part of our conversation.
Yeah, I think at this point, Greg, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that we're going to have to come at this from a different level of consciousness that created the problems, you know, because if we keep doing it at this level, sure, we'll end up in a revolution. The revolution always ends up turned back against us with some dictator. So it is definitely time to go on. And one of the things that makes it difficult.
Well, I want to say something about that, because I sense you're talking about America, or possibly about Western society, Western civilization. And I get a lot of questions, a lot of comments, people very concerned about who our leaders are. And what I want to say to our viewers is this: you know, presidents come and go. Presidents don't have the power that we would like to think that they're important and they have power, but they are not the omnipotent power that we would like to think. My concern is this: a little over 200 years ago, what I believe was a divinely inspired document seeded the idea of America, not the America we have today, but the idea. And to give that document power, we had what was called a constitution that gives power to the ideas of freedom, the freedom to live, the freedom to pursue joy and happiness and fulfillment in our lives. That has never happened anywhere with any government in 5,000 years of recorded human history. I personally believe it is a divinely inspired document. My concern is less about who comes and goes every 4 years or every 8 years. My concern is about, are we going to preserve the gift of that principle, that those documents, or many people believe they are now obsolete and they think they understand them better. And I want to tell you and our viewers, I travel the world, and publicly, other people from other countries will say things publicly. Behind the scenes, over a quiet meal at night, on the ride to the airport, backstage when nobody else is listening, 100%, every one of those people that I've talked to in every country have asked, they plead. They say, please, whatever you guys do, you guys being America, whatever you guys do, don't mess up that Constitution, because if you lose the freedoms you have, you will never have them again, and the world will have nothing to aspire to. And I think that is a very, very powerful, powerful knowing. So my concern is, you know, the diversion, you know, all the political stuff going on, those are diversions. Where are we with the fundamental principles that make this country what it is and have given this country the freedoms? And that's where I would keep my eye. That's the bouncing ball I would keep my eye on. And I do believe that this is a divinely inspired document. It's 56 men, and they were all males at that time. 13 of them happened to be Masonic traditions, Freemasons, and they understood a lot of the principles that we today call New Thought principles. And I've actually read the letters that these men were writing back and forth between one another. They said, we don't know what's going to happen 200 or 300 years from now, but they actually modeled the scenarios. They said, if this happens, how do the people have the freedom to prevail? If this happens, how do the people have the freedom to prevail? And from all of those scenarios, they put together the system of government, three branches, the balance of power, and the Constitution that gives power to the population that has never been given to any other nation. Even now, other nations are trying it, and they can't do it. So that's where I really feel where the action is right now. Are we going to preserve the wisdom of those people who gave us these freedoms? And I pray that we don't let those freedoms slip away, because those are the very freedoms that allow you and I to have the conversations we're having and to pursue the kinds of things that we're pursuing right now. That's all I'll say about it.
Well,
I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, that pretty much nails it right on the head for me too. And I think one of the things that whatever the powers that be are afraid of, because let's face it, they've incorporated the United States, they've changed everything. They've even changed the Constitution. One word changes everything in the new Constitution, and people don't realize what's going on. But as we are more well-informed, if we're a well-informed citizenry, that is the thing that's going to turn the tide. And it's so important, Greg, what all of us are doing out here right now, talking, because I don't know about you, but sometimes I put myself on the front line as being out there publishing a magazine and talking about things like vaccinations. I'm going to be interviewing Kevin Shipp. He's a CIA agent whistleblower.
Sure.
You know, talking about what's really going on with the CIA. And we have over 2,000 secretive organizations within the United States that hires over 1 million people that have signed non-disclosures. That's a lot of people in our civilization that are doing things in secret. And as we start talking about this and getting it out there, like we were talking about before, putting that light of consciousness on it not only allows other people to see it, but I do believe there is a grander consciousness that gives that a chance to penetrate even more into the human psyche and into the planetary consciousness. So I have one more question, because I think we're getting close to time, and this is a touchy question, I know, but I would like to ask you, what do you think, like the Georgia Guidestones talks about 500 million people being the optimum level, and if you really look at it, the reason the population stayed that way is because we were living from direct sunlight, but when we started processing ancient sunlight, fossil fuels, it's allowed us to grow exponentially. And if we're not careful, we're going to be 10, 11, 12 billion people. And I hear so many of the spiritual people talking about abundance. You don't have to worry about the water, the food, nothing. You know, we're living in abundance. They're trying to fool us. But I don't think so. I think the optimum level for this planet probably is 500 million people. And I think there are very powerful people that know this. But if we could start taking it under control, you know, talking to the Catholic priests, I mean, they're still telling people in sub-Saharan Africa that have AIDS, telling the married men that you have to not wear a condom. I mean, this is complete lunacy. If we start taking control of the population and finding really good ways to do it, we won't drive it to the point where it's going to be done for us, which will get ugly. What do you have to say about that?
You know, everything I'm hearing you say, with this respect, and everything that we've talked about, all of the things that we see as unhealthy choices, unhealthy ways of living today, the emergence of hate, for example, hate based upon the color of our skin, upon our sexual orientation, upon our religion, cyberbullying in schools of young people, our relationship to the earth, overpopulation, depletion of resources, all of those things, as different as they are from one another, and this is where I'm very passionate about my work. All of those things are only possible because of a way of thinking. And if we are going to do more than simply put a Band-Aid on what's happening in the world, it's good to go out and talk about population control, and it's good to, you know, talk about taking care of the earth and all these things. It's good to pass a law to make it illegal to kill someone based upon their sexual orientation. It's good to do that. But those are all Band-Aids. And until we can address the root, the core of the thinking that makes those Band-Aids possible, we're going to be spinning our wheels, and we're spinning our wheels, you know, right into climate change, right into the depletion of the resources. And so this is where I think not just my material, but the kind of work Bruce Lipton's doing, Joe Dispenza, Anita Morjani, there's a lot of really good people out there. Lynn McTaggart wrote the book The Field, and she's doing some awesome work out there, and they're all colleagues. Until we can get to the core of the way we've been taught to think about ourselves, all these other things, I think, are temporary stopgap measures at best. Our best hope is to reach the young people that, and I mean, we could start really young, but I mean, even the people who are in high school and college right now, reach the young people with the peer-reviewed science of the deepest truths of our existence, that we live in a world based upon cooperation, not Darwin's idea of competition and conflict. Survival of the strongest was Darwin's words. The new science tells us that's not true. We live in a world where there is some intelligent, intentional act that has led to our existence. And that helps us to feel very, very differently than the insignificant beings where life is cheap, life has lost its value, and where we don't value our relationship to the earth. This is the problem. If we value our relationship to the earth, we're not going to be doing chemtrails. We're not going to be throwing plastics in the ocean. We're not going to be creating, you know, 5, 10, 15 children per family because we understand these things. And if we value ourselves, the sanctity of life that's been lost, the new science gives us the reasons to respect life. When we begin to do that, we would never pump those vaccinations into our bodies. We wouldn't pump the opioids into our bodies. We wouldn't hurt ourselves. We wouldn't hurt one another. It's all based in a way of thinking. So for me, the key is to go to the root of where that thinking comes from and share honestly, truthfully, and factually what we now know to be true that overturns 150 years of false science. I think that's where the action is. That's where we really begin to heal this planet. So, you know, for people that are drawn to act, to confront something in the moment, I respect that. It's not my path, but I respect that. My path is the legacy that I would hope to leave when I'm no longer in this world, is that I have left a reason to think differently and instilled that into a generation that can make that difference and begin to think differently, vote differently, live differently, and demand a very different world. And I think that's the way I'll answer that question.
Well, Greg, all I can say is you've had a very positive effect on a lot of people. And seriously, I say it sounds like a profound statement, too profound to be true, but seriously, I know a lot of people, including myself, sleep better at night knowing that there are people like you and others out there really doing your passion and really getting this information out. And I so much appreciate your time, so much. You know, I'd like to make a quick thank you to, I don't know if you know Sally that works with Bruce Lipton. She manages all of
this. I know Sally very, very well.
Yeah, okay. She is the one that, she's the one who got me in touch with Paula, with Joe Dispenza, you know, to get that interview. And her and Paula are the ones that got in touch with Lori to get this interview. And I just want to thank all of these women that work behind the scenes. I mean, I can almost cry a little bit right now because they work so hard and so diligently to keep you guys out there, keep everything organized. And I would just like to thank them all.
They're good women. We're all supported by good women. You know, Joe and Bruce and I are brothers. We've known each other. I've known Bruce over 25 years before he ever had his book out there.
Yeah.
The women that support us, my Lori has worked with me this February is 23 years. We've worked together.
Wow.
She works very closely with Sally in Bruce's office. We all work with Paula. And Paula, you know, travels with Joe tremendously. And it's a team. And we men are supported by some awesome feminine, divine feminine energy, and we know that, we acknowledge that, we're very blessed by it. Thank you for recognizing them, and I'll pass it on to Lori
and
Sally when I talk to them after this interview.
Okay.
All right, my brother, thank you for the work you do.
Yep.
Thank you to all of our viewers.
Thank you so much for your time, Greg.
Love you all. Take care.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
Well, that was a great interview, and we're going to have some more great interviews coming up. Some of the future interviews are with Kevin Shipp. He's an ex-CIA agent. He's going to be telling us some secrets that aren't so secret anymore. Actually, quite frankly, some things that are almost unbelievable. And remember, this show is a nonprofit show. You can visit spiritualactivist.com, where you'll find a link there to our special PayPal link, where you can leave a tax-free donation. Thank you very much, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.